we can start the lesson. Sorry for the delay, but I said the previous lesson, I am always late. So also today we start with a few minutes delay. The topic today of the first hour is the human auditory system. That is how our body is equipped with systems, with organs, and with an apparatus for detecting sound and understanding speech and communicating by voice. Our auditory system is particularly tailored to voice reception and understanding, because for human, voice communication is the primary interpersonal communication system. So the system evolved in the century, in the millennia, for optimizing for speech recognition and for speech understanding. This means that compared with many other animals, our hearing system is limited in terms of frequency range, and it has gained a quite uneven frequency response, as we will see. This is because the system is optimized for voice. Other animals don't have voice communication, so they have a much wider frequency range and much flatter frequency response. Our hearing system is made mainly by three parts. We see here a cross-section of the of your body, of your head, and you see the external hearing system, which is called pinna, this part here, which is not really the hearing apparatus. It's just an external appendix, which has some acoustical property, but it is not so relevant. You cut this away and you hear very well the same. You only lose some localization capability. So the pinna really has little to do with hearing, has something to do with localizing where the source is. Then we have the ear duct. This is the tube, the pipe, connecting the pinna with what is inside your head. And this ear duct usually is filled of air. Air flows freely through the ear duct until it reaches this membrane, placed in this position, which is called the tympanic membrane. The tympanic membrane is a very small layer of skin which separates the external hearing system, which is outside. This is the external system, from the medium ear, which is the part being in between, the red part. This part here, colored by red, is called the medium or mid ear. And we have finally the internal ear. The internal ear is this part, oops, is this part here on the right. So the hearing system is divided in three parts: the external ear, which contains the pinna and the auditory meatus, or the ear duct is called. The medium part is a cavity which is inside the bone of the cranium. So inside the bone of your head there is this red cavity, which is again filled by air, but the air does not arrive from the external ear, because here there is the tympanic membrane, which is waterproof and airtight, so no air can pass through here. The air arrives here in the medium ear through a second pipe, a second tube, which is called the Eustachian tube. The Eustachian tube connects the cavity of the medium ear with your nose. So this pipe on the other end opens inside your nasal cavity, inside the nose. And through this Eustachian tube, you compensate the higher pressure inside this cavity with the external higher pressure. This is very important for hearing properly because the tympanic membrane transduce properly the acoustic pressure only if there is no differential pressure between inside and outside your head. If, for example, you go underwater, external pressure increases a lot. The pressure doubles in the first 10 meters of the shunt underwater. So there is two bars at 10 meters depth, and there is one bar where we are now. So the pressure doubles. The tympanic membrane is broken by such a large differential pressure. And if you break the tympanic membrane, you don't hear very well. You can cut away the pinna and you still hear very well. But if you break the tympanic membrane, then hearing loss is quite dramatic. You cannot hear almost nothing. So the tympanic membrane is quite delicate. It's very, very thin. It's made of skin, but very thin. So you always need to keep very well balanced the pressure inside and outside. And this occurs through the Eustachian tube. If the Eustachian tube, for any reason, closes, the compensation does not occur naturally, and you need to open it manually. And there are proper technique, compensation technique, for forcing the Eustachian tube to open and to leave the air, to allow the air to flow freely through the Eustachian tube, compensating the internal and the external pressure. Every diver, scuba diver, needs to learn how to compensate the internal cavity of the medium ear. If not, the tympanic membrane is destroyed very quickly. So there is pressure equilibrium between the two parts, and the tympanic membrane at this point only detects the acoustical pressure, that is the instantaneous fluctuation of the pressure above or below the average air pressure. The internal cavity contains the average air pressure and does not sense the acoustical pressure fluctuation. So there is this membrane which works like a differential transducer. It makes the difference between the acoustical pressure and the constant average air pressure. When the pressure outside is slightly above the internal pressure, the membrane moves in. When the pressure out of the head is smaller than the pressure inside this cavity, the tympanic membrane moves out. So the tympanic membrane actually moves in and out. How this movement is transduced to our brain, giving us the sensation of sound? The transmission happens through a system which is made of three bones. They are also called ossicles, ossicini. These three bones have a strange name. There is the malleus, the incus, and the stapes. The name comes from their shape, particularly the stapes. You see, it's exactly the same shape as a stape for an horse or similar thing. The three ossicles, the three bones, work like a system of levers and transform a large movement of the tympanic membrane with small force in a much smaller movement of the stape with a much greater force. So it is like an impedance converter. It transfers a lot of movement with little force in a small movement with a lot of force, which is typical of a lever system. This system works with variable gain because the action of the malleus over the incus, and the action of the incus over the staves is modulated by a muscle, a small muscle, called the stapedius. The stapedius is a very small muscle inside the ear, which can make this lever to work with a high ratio or with a smaller ratio. So it changes the gain, the mechanical transmission gain of this bone transmission chain. The stapedius is controlled by our brain not in a voluntary way. It is an involuntary movement, the stapedius muscle. The stapedius contracts when the sound is loud. So there is a sort of feedback. When our hearing system detects that the sound is very loud, immediately, or not so immediately, there is some delay actually, but after a very small number of milliseconds, the stapedius muscle contracts, and when the stapedius muscle contracts, the gain of the transmission reduces, so it is a system with variable gain. This is usually shown with an arrow like this. So the signal going through this stapedius, which is typically like an amplifier, is a mechanical amplifier, is a mechanical transformer, because it changes a lot of velocity with small pressure in a lot of pressure with small velocity. It's like a current transformer which transforms in an electrical circuit a lot of current with little voltage in a lot of voltage with a little current. Is the same more or less. But the ratio of this transformation is made variable by the stapedius muscle. And there is some sort of feedback, because the signal in the output of this system controls the gain. The gain is automatically controlled. This is the key mechanism which allows to our hearing system to work in such a huge dynamic range. Because when the system works at maximum gain, we can detect very weak sound. Our hearing threshold is really corresponding 20 micropascal, is very weak, is an incredible small sound. So our hearing system, when working at maximum gain, is incredibly sensitive. Instead, we can sustain quite loud noise, 120 decibel, is 20 pascal, is really a huge level, a very loud sound. At such a high level, the stapedius is fully contracted, and this reduces the gain of this transmission by something like 30 or 40 decibels when you are young and your stapedius work well. When you age, as every part of the body, also the stapedius muscle ages, and so this capability of changing the gain reduces. So an old man like me, or even older, cannot withstand anymore very loud sound, it is disturbing, and cannot hear anymore very weak sound, because this variable gain system reduces the capability of adjusting the gain. This is a mechanical gain, and the sound which was in the air as a vibration of air particles in the external ear is in the form of movement of a mechanical structure inside the medium ear. The medium ear terminates with the staves, which transmit the pressure to the internal ear, containing the internal hearing apparatus, which is called the cochlea. The cochlea has the shape of a lumaca, of a cochlea. Okay, you know that. You see the shape. And this is the real system capable of detecting sound. It is where the pressure applied from the staves to this organ is transferred to nerve, to the cochlear nerve, which is connected with your brains. So there the stimulus is not a vibration of a mechanical body anymore. It's an electrochemical message traveling on a nerve. How the system works? Well, you must understand that the cochlea, if you unroll it and you make it like a long pipe, is long something like 15 or 20 centimeters, is this length. Now it is rolled, so it is very small. But if you unroll this cochlea, it is this length. And inside it is a pipe again, but it is full by liquid. There is no more air. Air is here and here, in the external and mid hearing system. In the internal hearing system there is no air anymore. There is like water. It's not really water, it's a special liquid with special properties, but it is mostly water. And so there is no air inside. And this duct is actually divided in two by a membrane which is called the basilar membrane. Let me see if we have a cross section. No, you just see this picture here. Here is called membrana basale and is the basal membrane separating the two ducts, the two partial ducts, which are the vestibular duct, the upper one, and the tympanic duct, the second one. The staves apply his pressure on a window, which again is closed by a thin layer of skin, so it is airtight, and this window is called the oval window. Through the oval window, the acoustical pressure propagates inside the vestibular channel. At the end of the cochlea, that is in the center of the cochlea, the two channels, the vestibular channel and the tympanic channel, meet each other, are connected. So the sound from here travels through the cochlea until the center, and then it comes back through the other channel. So the path is this one. You go this way up to the end, here you turn back, you make a U-turn, and it comes back through the second channel. But at this point, the sound is incredibly attenuated. So, in reality, you can think that the acoustical pressure is much louder above the membrane, the basal membrane, than below. At the end, the tympanic channel terminates with a second window, which is again closed by a soft layer of skin, and no one is applying pressure here. So, in this point, the pressure can be thought to be zero. There is no acoustical load on this point here. Here it's zero. So, what happens to the basilar membrane when the pressure above is larger than the pressure below? It's obvious. If the pressure above is larger than the pressure below, the membrane is pushed down. Then, due to the acoustical oscillation, there will be a moment in which instead the pressure here is smaller than the pressure below, and at this point the membrane is pushed up. The membrane is sensored. It has a sensor over it. And these sensors are called ciliated cells, I think is the name, and these cells are detector of movement. So they detect when the membrane goes up and goes down, and through these wires they give electrical signal to the nerve, and the nerve runs along the cochlea and brings out the signal to the brain. The electrochemical signal to the brain. This is the detection mechanism. How our hearing system can separate the sound at different frequencies. The trick is as follows. The basilar membrane is not made the same way for all the whole length. At the beginning, The basilar membrane is very thin and with a lot of traction, with a lot of tension. So it is like the chord of a violin, and it resonates at very high frequency. You see that the flexion of the membrane is maximum at the beginning when stimulated with an 8 kHz pure tone. Going along the cochlea, the nature of the basilar membrane changes. It becomes thicker and thicker, and the resonance frequency reduces. So when you stimulate your hearing system with a 4 kHz tone, the area where you have maximum deflection of the membrane is here. Here is a 2 kHz, here is a 1 kHz, here is a 300 Hz, and so on, down to 20 Hz, which is the lower frequency we can hear at the very end of the cochlea, the unrolled cochlea tubes. So the system works as a mechanical frequency analyzer or a mechanical spectrum analyzer. Different portions of the membrane resonate at different frequency. So the higher cells, which are in this area, will send to the brain the information of the sound at 2 kHz. The higher cells in this area will give to the brain information of the sound at 4 kHz, and so on. Every point of the membrane is the detector for a different frequency. It's a parallel spectrum analyzer, working very well actually. It is quite difficult, also on a modern computer, to obtain the same capability of detecting simultaneously sound at different frequency, which our hearing system is capable of. Our hearing system is a very powerful spectrum analyzer. We arrived on the computer to equate the same analysis capability only since, say, 2 years, or perhaps 1 year. We are not there yet perfectly. So it is really difficult. The system works incredibly well. When I was student, but also 10 years ago, what was told at the student, it was current hardware was not capable of making a frequency analysis with the same capability as the hearing system. Today we are there, more or less, but only since a few years, really a few. And the system is not in current use currently. The mathematical technique employed for emulating this spectrum analyzer capability of our system is called the fast wavelet transform. I don't know if anyone of you has heard of this technique. I think not, because it's a technique which is very modern and not widely employed yet. So it is something just employed in some research lab all around the world. It's not something you can find on the road. You cannot go in a shop and tell, oh, please sell me a fast wavelet analyzer. They can sell you a fast Fourier analyzer, which is not the same thing. Fourier is terribly worse than what our hearing system can do. In many courses here at engineering, you hear about Fourier analysis, fast Fourier transform and similar things. Until some years ago, that was the best thing was possible. But nowadays is a completely obsolete technology. Fast wavelet transform are really much better. Of course, they require much more computational power, but we have it for free now on a modern computer. So the fast Fourier transform, we will see later in this course, has a strong limitation and is not capable of providing the same frequency resolution and temporal resolution as our hearing system can do. And this was done with just a very simple mechanical system. Okay? This is another picture showing the same thing, the cochlea unrolled and different portion of the cochlea responding to different frequencies. This is also the explanation why usually people start losing hearing capabilities at very high frequency. The 8 kHz band is the first one to be lost. When you are exposed to a lot of noise or to an explosion or something like that, you don't think become immediately completely deaf. This takes years. At the beginning, you start having some partial hearing loss, but the initial hearing loss always occurs at high frequency. So first you lose high frequency, then you lose 4 kHz, then you lose 2 kHz, and going on, as more you are exposed to noise and as more your hearing system is damaged, then the damage works, travel progressively from high frequency down to low frequency. As we are mostly concerned with speech, you must know that most of the information contained in the human voice is below 4 kHz, below 3 kHz. So, if you initially lose the 8 kHz and 4 kHz bands, still you can speech and listen to the speech quite well. Only when the damage enters the medium frequency region, 2 kHz and 1 kHz, you start having problem understanding the speech. This depends both on age and exposure to noise. People making a work like me, which expose me systematically to the sound of machinery, the noise of cars or trucks, or the sound radiated by loudspeaker or even musical instrument, which also are very powerful sound source, start losing their high frequency capability when they are still young. Now I am 55 and my current limit is not anymore 20 kHz, but it is around 12 kHz. Still is quite good because above 10 kHz usually there is nothing to hear, apart some violins, but in most sound fields there is nothing above 10 kHz. But going on with my years, with my age, I will progressively lose the 8 kHz, the 4 kHz, and so on. People making other kind of works, for example in a mechanical factory, where there is really a lot of noise, they start losing their high frequency hearing even younger. And this is a social problem. It's also an economical problem, because at least here in Italy, 60% of the money given to worker for invalidity, for having damaged their body due to the work they do, 60% of this money goes for failure of the hearing system. Only 40% is for people losing their finger under a pressing machine or having some other kind of injuries during their work. 60% of the money is all for acoustical problems. So we are talking here about 1 billion euros a year in Italy. A lot of money. This is one of the reasons for which acoustics is such a rich field. There is a lot of money flowing, starting from the protection of workers. The protection of workers and avoiding hearing damage to workers is a big business, actually, because there is a lot of money being involved, a lot of action in the courts for people wanting to get this money from their employee, and so on. So it is a social problem and an economical problem. And in this course, we learn the basis of this protection. How to avoid excessive exposure to noise, how to avoid that people lose their hearing when they are still young. Some hearing loss is natural. At 8 years age, most people cannot hear anymore 8 kHz. They probably can still hear more or less 4 kHz, and they can speak quite well, if you don't have any exceptional exposure to noise. People working in a factory probably are much worse. You can use those electroacoustical devices for providing some compensation of your hearing loss. But when the hearing loss is too large, No electrical device can provide you with enough gain to compensate for a loss of 60 decibel or more. This is an electronic microscope scan of the cochlea. The size is very small. You see these are 500 microns, so it is half a millimeter. So this image is enlarged a lot. And you see the basilar membrane and the two ducts, the tympanic duct and the cochlear duct. So, and again, you see the various frequencies starting from the beginning and going down to the center. What does this mean in terms of performance of the hearing system? Well, in terms of performance, there are two factors. One is the frequency response, and one is the amplitude response. Our hearing system is twice not linear. It's not linear in frequency, but it's also not linear in amplitude. So it is a double not linearity, which is shown by this diagram. How this diagram should be read? In abscissa, here below, there is the frequency. F in air. And here vertically there is the sound pressure level in decibel. Okay? Decibel dB. Every line, every black line here represent points which are perceived with the same loudness. So subjectively the sound is the same level. Of course it is not, because the true level is shown here. Let me follow, for example, one of these lines. The line which is 40 decibel, you see 40, at 1 kHz. 1000 Hz is always considered the central frequency, and is also considered the reference frequency. Everything is usually calibrated at 1 kHz. So we start with a sound, a reference sound, of 40 dB at 1 kHz. Now we reduce the frequency to 100 Hz, from 1000 to 100. For being perceived with the same loudness, the sound must be boosted to 50 decibels, so 10 decibels more. This means that our hearing system has lost 10 dB, going down from 1 kHz to 100 Hz. If you go at even lower frequency, the hearing loss is even larger, at, say, 30 Hz, you see here, you go up, you go up, you go up, and here you read 85. So, 80, perhaps it was... it's wrong. It's here the crossing, sorry. 78, okay. So a sound of 40 decibel at 1 kHz perceptually is the same as a sound of 78 decibel at 30 Hz. The same happens at high frequency, as you see here. The frequency at which we have maximum sensitivity is approximately 3.5 kHz here. Here is the frequency where we get maximum sensitivity, and you see from this chart that a sound of more or less 32 or 33 decibel is equal perceptually to a 40 decibel sound. This is the concept of the isophonic line. This chart is called the isophonic chart. Each of these lines is said to have the same phonic value. And the number written here, which is the decibel value at 1 kHz, is called the number of phon. The phon is a unit of human perception. It's not a physical quantity, the phone. It's a perceptual quantity. It tells you how loud a sound is perceived. So, all the points of this line here are said to be sounds of 40 phones. This is the isophone line of 40 phones, which means 40 decibels at 1 kHz. So if at the exam I ask you, please explain me what is an isophone. An isophone is the value in decibel which equates a given value at 1 kHz. The isophone of 40 phones tell you which is the level at every frequency which is perceived the same subjective loudness as a sound of 40 decibel at 1 kHz. I don't know if this is very clear. It must be digested, this concept. It's not immediate. The point is that the cars are all different. These cars are not all the same. They are different. They appear to be with different shape. At high frequency, the cars are much flatter. At high level, they are much flatter. When the sound is very loud, the frequency response of our hearing system flattens. When the sound is very weak, the frequency response is incredibly curved. So our hearing system is twice not linear. It would be not linear in frequency if the shape was the same at every level with always the same frequency response. But our system is also not linear in amplitude. So at medium frequency, we have a very huge range here. You see, we can go between 0 decibel up to 140 decibel. But at very low frequency, the dynamic range is much more compressed. You don't have any more 140 dB of dynamic range. We have just perhaps 70 or 80 dB of dynamic range. So the system is quite tricky to represent mathematically. It's not easy to have an electronic system or a software running on a computer capable of doing the same, giving you a number which represents how loud we perceive the sound. There is a second problem. The cars which I've shown you here were detected by experiments conducted in Boston, in the United States, in the 30s. More than 80 years ago, when people were not used to motor vehicles, disco music, rock concert, and all these nice things in which we live today. So those cars were old, were not anymore representing the hearing system of modern men. That was good for the men of 1 century ago. The human system changed a lot in the last century. Changed in a bad way, of course. The hearing system of people 1 century ago was better than the hearing system of you today. It is usually evaluated that the hearing capability of a youngster 20 years old now is the same of the hearing capability of an old man of 1 century ago. Because you start being exposed to very loud sound since when you were just born, since your children. So we arrive at 20 years ago, old, your hearing system is already damaged. So the system was measured again with repeating the experiment, the listening experiment. These experiments are conducted using students as subjects, typically students at the university, like you. There are two factors which made this test wrong. First, it was 8 years ago. Second, in Boston, in the theory, all students were male, all students were white-skinned. Now the test has been repeated again in Boston, but 10 years ago. Now, half of the students are female, of course, and 1/3 are colored, are not white-skinned. The result is very different. The red cars are the new one, and if you compare with the old car at 40 decibel, 1 kHz, you see that now the hearing system has even more curved response. And the loss going from 1 kHz to 100 Hz, which was 10 decibel one century ago, is now 20 decibel, 22 decibel, or 24. From 40 to 64, we have lost 24 decibel now, and it was just 10 decibel one century ago. This means that the hearing capability of low frequency sound of modern men are much worse than in the past. And in some way we should keep this into account when performing operation which involve manipulation of the spectrum of the sound. One of the most interesting of such operation is the compression. When you store a sound recording in a compressed format, like MP3 or like IFE or ACI or those compressed format for downloading the music from internet, the compression algorithm initially was designed over these cards, the old one. When MP3 algorithm was deployed, it was tailored thinking that the hearing system of the man was working with this chart. More recently, it was discovered that this chart is wrong, that the new chart must be used, and more refined compression algorithms are now capable of compressing better the sound, and better I mean both with higher perceived quality and smaller size of the file being compressed, because our system is worse, so there is no point in codifying inside the recording frequency which are not audible anymore. So we can make a more lossy compression and still be perceived correctly if equalized properly at the coding, at play. So this is one of the most important effects of the discovery that our hearing system changed in the last century. There are other effects we will see later. What is done usually in normal measuring instruments for giving you a number which represents more or less the human perception, instead of giving you just the number of decibel, which, as we have seen from the chart before, does not represent the human hearing perception. What is done is to use a filter, an electronic filter, which is called a weighting curve, or a weighting network is also called. A filtering passive network is a circuit, an electrical circuit, made of capacitor, condenser, and perhaps some inductance or some similar object. This circuit filter the sound coming from the microphone, attenuating low frequency, boosting medium frequency around the 3-4 kHz region, and attenuating again very high frequency. The widely employed weighting curve is the A weighting curve. This is what is currently employed in the measurement standard, and sound level meter, which are the instruments employed for doing this kind of evaluation, usually employ the awaiting curve. Then there is another curve which is also employed, which is the C weighting curve, which is much flatter. The A weighting curve is used for levels, for sound pressure level up to 90 decibels. The C weighting curve is used for pulsive sound peaks like explosion at very high level, more than 100 decibel peak. This corresponds to the fact that at high level the curves are much flatter, and at low level the curves are very curved. Roughly, these curves are the reciprocal, the mirrored version of the hearing system. So the signal passes through this filter, and then you compute the value in decibel, give you roughly a number which is similar to the value in form. Roughly. Because the curves here is much more complex, and instead the filters is quite simple. Okay? So, when we make a measurement and we give the result in dBA, it means that the result has been weighted by this awaiting curve. And if you see the result in dBC, it means that the spectrum of the sound has been filtered with such a C filter. Initially, there were many of this filter. I, B, C, D, E. All the others are gone nowadays, and nowadays we only use A and C. This is very important for you, also for the exam, because this is the table giving you the awaiting correction factor at every frequency. So if you want to know how large is the correction for awaiting at 100 Hz, you go into this table and here you read that at 100 Hz the correction factor is minus 19.1 decibel. This table will be required for making exercise, for making computation, calculation, which allow you to analyze a complex spectrum of a sound and get a single number, and the single number is the total awaited sound pressure level. Most standard regulation laws limits are all expressed with this number, the total awaited A-weighted sound pressure level. So you need to have this table with you when you come making the exam. Okay? You cannot ask to your colleague during the exam. You cannot download it from the internet. You must have it printed with you when you come for the exam, because you need to have access to this number. And of course, you should not learn the number by memory. That's completely wrong. You must just have the table with you. So, download this sheet and print it and keep it with you. There are two other factors we have to discuss before ending this lesson. We have seen effects of nonlinearity in amplitude and of nonlinearity in frequency. There is also nonlinearity in time. A loud sound creates masking, time masking. When there is a masking sound, the threshold is increased. Usually the threshold is 0 decibel. But if there is a masking noise, for example the fan which you hear here for the ventilation system of this room, this is a masker sound, broadband, continuous, after a while you don't hear it anymore. Apparently it's not there anymore for you. But what is the effect of such a masking sound? It increases the threshold. It is like being deaf, because being present is masking noise. You cannot detect anymore a sound of 0 decibel. If you want to detect the sound, this must be louder. Okay? So the threshold, the hearing threshold is increased. But what is strange, it is not only increased while the masking sound is present. It remains deaf, your hearing system, after the sound stops. And this is easy to understand with the stapedius. When the masking sound was present, the stapedius did contract, reducing the gain. When the masking sound goes away, it takes a while for the stapedius to relax, providing you again with maximum amplitude, maximum amplification of the bone transmission chain. What is really strange is to see also a pre-masking. Post-masking is quite obvious. How the hell can you have a pre-masking? Before the masking sound comes, you already start to be deaf to the sound, to reduce your hearing capability. How can you guess that the loud sound will come? Apparently it is impossible, okay? In reality this can be explained very well, because on the acoustical nerve connecting the cochlea with your brain, the electrochemical impulse of nerve transmission travel with a certain speed, which is not constant. It depends on the intensity of the stimulus. If the stimulus is loud, it travels faster. If the stimulus is weak, it travels slower. So when the loud masking sound arrives, what happens? That the noise, being louder, travels faster over the nerve and overruns the neural information coming from the weak sound, which did occur before the noise started to be there. So in the end, as if a stimulus of a weak sound was occurring just before the real noise, the loud noise comes, the loud noise will overrun in time the weak noise and mask it. Okay? So this effect of pre-masking has to do to the fact that stimuli on a nerve don't travel with the same speed, but the speed is larger for the loud stimulus, and a weak stimulus travels slower. This has to do with all human sense, also with your finger. If you hammer over your finger making a lot of pain, this will travel very quickly to your brain. If instead you get a very weak stimulation because you are just touching very slightly your skin, this is much slower, and this has been measured. So we actually can know the speed of travel of the information over the nerve, which is high, but not much higher than the speed of sound in air. It is quite comparable, the speed of the stimuli in the nerves. Then there is frequency masking. Frequency masking is the same in the frequency domain. If you have a masking tone, a pure tone like moon, okay, this makes it impossible to hear tones which have frequencies smaller and larger of some amplitude, on some frequency band, below and above the frequency of the masking tone. And the system is the same. You need to go back to the cochlea for understanding this. When one particular point of the cochlea is being stimulated, as you see here you get maximum stimulation, but also before and after you get some response of the basilar membrane. So the basilar membrane is already excited by this tone, so it cannot detect a weak sound at this frequency or at this one. As you see, this shape is asymmetrical. Towards high frequency, the curve stays quite high. At low frequency, the response falls down abruptly. And in fact, when you go back to the frequency masking curve, you see that this bell-shaped masking curve is steeper at low frequency and broader at high frequency. So the masking is asymmetric. And this again is employed in MP3 encoding or similar compression algorithm. So when you have a loud sound at a given frequency, there is no need anymore to store and transmit information under this masked curve, because everything happening below this curve is not audible. So you can strip it away from your recording and not store it on the disk and not transmit it over the internet. It doesn't matter because it's not audible, it's masked, and this both in time and frequency. So a good perceptual compression algorithm knows all these facts and make use of them for reducing the amount of information being transmitted, because that information will not be audible. Okay? Any questions?
So we can make a break.